The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Now offering MyCU current account and debit MasterCard. Bringing full banking features. Delivered with the same local trustworthy service of your credit union. The county's number one talk show. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes just turned. 5 minutes past nine on another wintry morning across the Northwest. It is Thursday, the 19th of January, 2023. I do hope you are well. And of course, you're very welcome along to the show. Hopefully we'll keep you informed and entertained. Throughout the next 3 hours on the programme and throughout the day here on your number one local radio station. The lines are open for you right now. Another snow day for a lot of young ones out there. Not so young ones too, perhaps. Thanks to Lee for keeping us updated with all the school closures, all the postponements and what's happening on the roads. It's really appreciated. Any further information to pass on, you know, the numbers 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000, or send your comments to email comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch this show, why would you be watching This Morning or whatever nonsense is on the TV when you can watch your own show here dedicated to the northwest of Ireland? Go on to your smart TV or your Fire Stick and open up the YouTube app, stick in Highland Radio Ireland, watch us up on your big screen. Same applies for Facebook Watch, just search Highland Radio. You can watch us there on your tablet or mobile as well, and you can also watch on our website in browser, highlandradio.com. And lots of emerging news over the last couple of days. We're going to keep you right across that. All right, let's start with a look at the newspapers today. The Tyrconnell Tribune. The Fianna Fáil party in Donegal has been requested to select and identify the local election candidates before the end of this week. The request has come from Party HQ in Dublin, and it's seen as trying to awaken grassroots interests amongst the membership. A scheduled meeting was already postponed, with party sources telling the Tribune the meeting is due to be held this Friday night. With the party holding the biggest number of councillors in Lifford, they will want to start oiling the wheels once again to retain their 12 seats. It's not clear yet if all their outgoing members will run in 2023, and it's also unclear if any exciting new heartthrobs, as they're described here, will want to put their heads above the parapet this early in the new year. Interesting times. The Donegal News, we want answers. Defective block homeowners in Donegal are demanding answers after government announced a 100% redress scheme for apartments affected by construction defects, which is expected to cost up to $2.5 billion. The announcement has left homeowners concerned that those who are suffering in defective concrete houses are being deprioritised and questioning why they're being left in limbo. And as you heard from the housing minister there in response to, if you were listening to the news, in response to Thomas Pringle, he believes, everything's going rightly in Donegal and Mayo. Things are flying. And this new scheme, you described the new scheme, the new enhanced scheme, as working well. I didn't think the new enhanced scheme was up and running yet. But anyway, obviously, we're going to have some reaction to this story. I do note that no one's talking about the taxpayer having to foot this bill and the poor taxpayer. It's just €2.5 billion, worst of all. And by the way, can I just say very clearly, I'm very pleased for these people, these homeowners. I have no issue with whatever I pay into the system supporting them. Unfortunately, we didn't see the same grace from some parts of the country when we were discussing MICA. But I do note that I haven't really heard politicians pointing out the fact that they have to be really careful with this scheme because this is taxpayers' money, you know. That type of rhetoric was reserved for us here in Donegal and other affected counties. Obviously, we've got two people in government in this county, Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue, Deputy Joe McHugh. We have made contact with them with a view to having a conversation with them today to see what they think of this decision. I'll let you know later on the status of the responses to those invitations. But we're going to be talking to people affected by defective concrete blocks, defective concrete products here in Donegal a little later on to see what they... I don't think anyone begrudges these other homeowners their 100% redress scheme, but my word, the difference with how that has been announced versus the drag to the table, kicking and screaming, and what they left on the table for Donegal, it's night and day. Donegal Democrat hospital protest plan for Saturday. I'm very interested still to see what kind of a turnout will be at this protest. The weather looks like clearing for Saturday, by the way. But overcrowding at Letterkenny University Hospital's emergency department has reached crisis levels, and unless something is done to address it, Donegal lives will be lost. Look, they may well have already been lost. That's the stark prediction from what I added on. They may well have already been lost, by the way. I don't want to attribute a quote to someone that they didn't make, but I can't see how it hasn't happened. Anyway, that's the stark prediction from one of the organisers of this Saturday's Day of Action protest at the facility. The chairperson of the Letterkenny Hospital campaign, Mary T. Sweeney. The Letterkenny woman is calling for people power at the event, which starts on Saturday at... Sorry, my chair's collapsed here. On Saturday at 1pm. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, before the end of the week. The Derry News, customers urged to use cash. The owner of a small business in the city has asked customers to pay by cash where possible in future. David Dunn, owner of the iconic fish and chip shop Brendan's on Spencer Road, said the charges he was facing from card machines and app operators had become an unaffordable expense for a small business with a small team of staff. David, who runs the Chippy and adjoining cafe with his wife Catherine, daughter of the eponymous Brendan, said they had always tried to keep their prices as low as they possibly could for their customers. Speaking to the paper, he said, "Our aim was always to look after our customers, have a viable business and look after our staff. But the way the situation has transformed since COVID, it's just crazy." He says, please, where you can, use cash. And then you have some businesses very keen for the customers to use cash, many customers very keen to use cash, and then you've got other businesses that refuse cash. It's a funny old world, isn't it? The Irish Independent, a bit of coverage today on Pascal Donoghue, the Under Fire Minister. He didn't take questions last night, which I thought was really quite interesting. Pascal Donoghue has revealed he personally sold 2020 and 2021 Fine Gael raffle tickets to businessman Michael Stone. The five Super Draw tickets sold in 2020 amounted to a donation of €334, while in 2021 Mr. Stone bought 22 tickets to a donation value of €1,382, Mr. Donoghue revealed. The Public Expenditure Minister gave a short statement in the Dáil yesterday evening over his failure to declare expenses for hanging election posters. Over the weekend, it emerged that Mr. Donoghue had not declared a payment made by Mr. Stone to six people to hang up election posters ahead of the 2016 general election. Now, I think it was Pádraig Tobin that called for an audit of submissions from elected representatives to make sure that everything that should have been declared was declared. The government rejected that. And then, quite interesting, listening to Eamon Ryan this morning, he was being questioned and he was asked as to, why more conversation is not happening in the Dáil, right? And his argument was is that that's the role of SIPO. And why would you do it in the Dáil when that's what SIPO was there for? But he also said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he effectively said that it would take up too much time because so many members would have questions to answer. Now, it's not an exact quote, that, but that's effectively what he said. Not a great indictment of the political system, is it, when you have one of the leaders of the government suggesting that discussing claims in the Dáil, because it could affect so many people, would take up too much time. That's a problem. I think that's a problem. All right, the Irish Times. A plan to install thousands of electric vehicle charging points around the country will place more pressure than ever on the electricity grid, the government has been warned. Minister for the Environment, Eamon Ryan, will today announce a €100 million strategy that aims for charging points to be placed at 60-kilometre intervals along motorways and taxi ranks, tourist office, hospitals, hotels and sports clubs. There are also plans for charging the charging system to serve apartment blocks and neighbourhoods. Now, again, I don't wish to be cynical, but I have to be honest, on this programme, between the ESB and the government, we seem to have talked about multiple announcements of improvements to the EV charging infrastructure. If you're a regular listener, you know we have. The ESB have been on. We're investing this, that and then. The government have made various announcements. I might catalogue them just to see what kind of announcements has been made. Yet, people contacting this programme say that the infrastructure is poor. It's not, in fact, it's not that it's improving. In fact, to some extent, some would say it's getting worse because it can be unreliable as to whether charging points are available or not. And that's a shame because there's a huge interest in the public in EV cars, hybrid cars. We can get into that whole debate another time about whether or not we should be or not. But that's the facts. The statistics don't lie. But we had a town like Ardrar, for example. I'm not sure if the situation has been resolved there yet. That despite all the various announcements, it doesn't have one single charging point. If anyone's listening in Ardrar, and if that's changed, please let me know. But anyway, this strategy to be announced today states the number of charging points could increase from 1,700 to between 2,540 and 4,850 within 3 years as a result of the significant number of additional charging points being contemplated. It warns that the widespread use of electric vehicles will place more pressure than ever on Ireland's electricity network, which is worrying because the government was warned that it needed to very much improve the infrastructure in this country, particularly with the welcoming nature we have towards data centres, which are very power intensive. But very little was done to improve, even with warning, very little was done to improve the infrastructure. All right, on to the Irish Daily Mail now. If you're a second-hand car owner, it's continuing to go up in value. The value of second-hand cars has increased substantially thanks to the effects of the pandemic and a scarcity of new vehicles. The impact of COVID and a shortage of microchips has severely restricted the supply of new cars and upended the market, I read. This has led to the number of second-hand cars for sale drying up, meaning that they have been rising in value. Someone who bought a used car for $5,000 before the pandemic would now be able to sell it for up to $8,500 with 2 years depreciation. It should really be worth around $3,000. Prices are almost 70% higher now compared to the pandemic onset in February 2020. Compared to this time last year, prices have increased by more than 16%. Now, it depends on which car you have too. I think the lower value cars have increased in value to a greater extent than the higher value cars, but it's nice, is it, if you've a loan out to think that maybe your car is not depreciating as quickly as your loan is. The Irish Farmers Journal, Ireland's beef trade is poised for further increases in demand, or as demand exceeds supply. Some processors have indicated a 50 to 20 cent a kilogram bonus for China eligible cattle when processing begins later this month. Average prices for R3 bullocks have already increased by 54 cent a kilogram in 8 weeks. Which is good news, I presume. Okay, more in that Farmer's Journal, hugely popular paper, it has to be said. Right, on to the Irish Daily Star. RTE have the begging bowl out again. It's looking for reform of the TV licence system because it is not working, a Dáil committee heard. And the station said that there isn't a sustainable future for RTE unless the public funding model is overhauled. The committee also heard last evening that the controversial Toy Show musical that failed to sell all its tickets and was slammed in many quarters will return next winter. The national broadcaster is losing money every year as people move away from watching TV in the traditional way as they ditch televisions and embrace streaming services in droves. RTE said that 16.5% of households in Ireland are now no TV homes, which is an increase from 3% just 5 years ago. Are you a no TV home? Tell us why. Did you used to have a TV and did you get rid of the TV and how did it change your life? And when I say no TV, what I mean, I'm not sure what they mean, is that you don't watch any TV anymore. Let us know, 086 60 25000. But I think, you know, if RTE want the licence fee to be reformed, they need to reform themselves. They need to stop paying people €700,000 a year for doing 1 hour here and 2 hours there. Why come back to us looking for more money? Show us how you're spending the money. I mean, they spent a fortune on launching the autumn TV schedule. Hundreds and 80,000 euro, wasn't it? 80,000 euro. That's an awful lot of license fees, isn't it? And then they've got this musical. It's the hobby horse of someone there. Why do it? There's no need for it. There's no need for it. Now, I know there were some local people involved in it, and that's great. But there's no need for RTE to be running a musical. It didn't sell out this year. So why continue? They had to cancel shows for other reasons as well. So why continue with it? You know, that's spending... What, the orchestra, why is that still being funded the way it is? Come up with a different funding model. You know, the likes of News Talk, Virgin Media, other independent stations, us here, just to remind you, we get no license fee money. When I say no, there is some funds that come through for documentaries and stuff on a small level. It's nothing like what RTE get from it. But just to be absolutely transparent, there's no regular payment or no support. It's all done. The business model in this station, like others, I presume, is it's advertising based, and your costs, you have to keep your costs down, and that's how you try and continue. But RTE don't want to do that. They just want more money from the public to keep going, which I don't think is terribly fair. And I would be saying that if I wasn't working here. I'm not speaking on behalf of Highland Radio. It just seems wrong. On to the Irish Daily Mirror. What am I reading? Here it is. RTE star Emer O'Neill has revealed Tommy Tiernan apologised to her and removed a joke from his set. Last week, the Bray native told us, that's the paper, she walked out of the comedian's Vicar Street gig in Dublin last Friday week after becoming upset over a joke he told about taxi drivers. After publicising her upset, Emer has now revealed to the paper that Tommy has apologised to her for the hurt caused. The Navan native wrote her an email saying, "Dear Emer, I'm sorry about the hurt that a joke I told at Vicar Street on Friday night has caused you." He says it was never his intention, as he removed it from his set. All right. And finally, as we know, the legend that is Christy Dignam, he is currently in palliative care and has spoken to his fans and the general public via his daughter. Christy Dignam's daughter says support from Aslan Legends' legions of fans has given her ailing dad a much-needed boost. Dignam's daughter, Kira, has broken her silence following her father's recent devastating health update. Rock legend Christy has been battling amyloidosis, a rare blood disorder, since 2013. Earlier this week, the Crazy World singer's family shared a heartbreaking update revealing he's getting palliative care at home. Well, Kira has now said that the supportive response from fans has given Christy a boost. She said on social media, "My dad just asked me to thank everyone for their support, well wishes and kind words over the last couple of days." All right, okay, so... All right, just a couple of updates from out on the roads. Creasler Day Centre will remain closed today, I've been asked to mention to you. Caller says the hill up to St. Eunan's College from Tin Tai Restaurant's in a bad way this morning with cars sliding back down the road. And Letterkenny Rovers Bingo in the Station House Hotel is cancelled this evening due to the weather. Right, we had a text in from a caller, and as we always try and get answers as best we can, and it read as follows. "Hi Greg, can I ask if anyone knows anything about cross-border workers living in the south and working in the north, and issues around working remotely? Workers will no longer be able to work from home for more than 30 days a year because of tax implications. Could you raise this on your show to see if there is anyone who could shed some light on this issue and possibly get a workaround?" So we reached out to Connor Dowds, former co-chair of the Cross Border Workers Coalition. Former, isn't that correct, Connor? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, that's correct. I was co-chair of the Cross Border Workers Coalition while we had that up and running.
No problem. Just to make sure I didn't introduce you incorrectly. Right. So, what is the problem that this listener's highlighting there, Connor?
Yeah. So maybe, Greg, what I can do is, well, first of all, I'm not a tax expert for sure. So as it gets to any of the specifics of it, I definitely would recommend people reach out to some of the tax consultants and experts that are out there for specific advice and so forth. But I'll give a little bit of history and then take it through to what the situation looks like today. So historically, there's a tax agreement between Ireland and the UK. And what that means is if you live in Ireland but work in the UK, your employment is residing there, you don't pay double tax on your income in both jurisdictions. And that was introduced maybe 20 or so years ago. And also there's a criteria set out which allows you to claim something called trans-border workers relief. So someone in my position who lives in Donegal, works in Northern Ireland, can claim this relief. And what it says is, if I'm employed in the UK, living in the Republic of Ireland, I can claim this relief and essentially avoid paying additional tax within the Republic of Ireland. Just pay your tax in the UK and you're covered. During the COVID-19 pandemic, there was an allowance made because obviously people were told, don't go to the office, stay and work from home if you can. And that relief existed during the core period of the COVID-19 pandemic, but has since been dropped. The key restriction with that relief, which is a great relief and improved things greatly, you know, from where it was 20 years ago, is all of your work, 100% of that work, must be performed outside the state. And what that means is you really can't perform any work from within the Republic of Ireland. And if you do, then you incur these tax liabilities. Mm. Now, your texter mentioned a 30-day period. again, this is where individuals should reach out to a personal tax consultant to get specific advice on their scenario, because there's many layers to this. There's a lot of legs that it grows once your scenario or your situation changes. So 30 days may be something that this person has been advised, but essentially, if you're living in the Republic of Ireland, performing work for a UK company or based in the UK, you generally have a tax liability unless you claim this transborder workers relief. And then that stipulation kicks in that 100% of that work must be performed outside of the state of the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, I don't think maybe the text kind of understands the modern way of working, though, because whilst you might be located in the Republic, your productivity, your output is in Britain and Northern Ireland. So, it sounds like we're trying to use old wording to apply to a new situation.
It's possible. And again, the meaning and the impact of it really is very different depending on the nature of your work. So, for example, I work in the technology sector, so a lot of my work is done on a computer. A lot of my work is done remotely, if you will. So that sort of industry is quite suited to people working remotely, or the work not actually taking place, if you will, in the Republic of Ireland if I were working from home. Other people, depending on the nature of the job, may physically need to be in an office or in a factory or in a location in the UK, and then it's not really a question for them. But there are other people who may be employed in Northern Ireland companies or in England, and the work they perform might physically require them to be in the Republic of Ireland to perform that work. So it does put them in a much more difficult position.
I presume what you're talking about there is maybe, say, someone who works for a blinds fitting company in Derry, and they do a lot of work fitting blinds in the Republic, and they live in the Republic. Although they're working in Derry, a lot of the work is on the ground in the Republic where they live. Is that...
That's a really good example of it. Anything that requires that physical presence...
Don't know
that,
why I thought of a blind company, but anyway, it could be anything.
It's a good example. As the sun shines through my window for the first time in a couple of days, the blinds are something definitely front of mind. But it's a great example of how it can impact people. And what we found was, really, when the COVID-19 pandemic occurred, this started to raise questions, and a lot of people started to ask about it. And the nature of how companies work, particularly those companies where you can work remotely, where previously that wasn't the case or the culture, this question arose more and more. And we created the Cross Border Workers Coalition because our own company had a challenge with this, and many other companies we spoke to had a challenge. And a lot of individuals really were confused about what they could and could not do. And it is quite confusing. So we ran a campaign for almost 2 years, successful in some quarters in terms of the buy-in and general support we got from many companies, individuals, political representatives from across the spectrum. But when we got as far as the Department of Finance, they did review it. They did produce a paper as part of the 2021 tax bill. But really, the disappointing thing was, I don't think they took the time to fully understand the impact for people who live and work around the border regions in particular. And they really found a way not to change anything and keep the status quo, as opposed to, in my opinion, looking for an opportunity to change it. And there's a couple of really good examples where this disadvantages people. So the company I work for would have people who work on call. So if I apply for a job, part of that job might mean I need to be on call overnight. But if I live in Donegal, I technically can't perform on-call duties unless I get in my car and drive to Derry or wherever the office happens to be located. So it does disadvantage people in terms of, you know, applying for employment, getting that employment. And then if I'm a company based around the border, you know, talent's a limited resource. So what you want to be able to do is pull from as much talent as possible, even attract people back from Dublin, London, other places to the locality. But and this is a... it's an obstacle that gets created.
So, I mean, obviously, the number one piece of advice is speak to a tax consultant, but let's just hypothesise. So this person who's living in the south, working in the north, and has issues around working remotely, what is the penalty for them? Like, are they being expected to pay tax, full tax on their income in both north and south? Like, how are they being disadvantaged at this time that they would feel they need to text us?
Yeah, at a very high level, probably the main thing is they're confused, because everyone we spoke to in this topic was confused, and it's very hard to get a specific answer and be comfortable with where you sit. But the advice I would give them, as you say, talk to a tax consultant who's an expert. But the other thing is, you're not being required to pay 100% double tax in two jurisdictions. You don't pay your tax in the UK and then start from scratch in the Republic. What the taxation agreement, the double taxation agreement, does is it says, okay, we have an agreement with the UK. You've paid a lot of tax there. Now let's look at what you paid there. Look at what you would have paid here in the Republic, they do a comparison and you may end up paying a differential or additional tax. And that tax can be based on many things such as your income, but also the number of days that you perform work within the Republic of Ireland. So again, that's where it starts to get a little convoluted and have multiple layers.
Are there any advantages in terms of maybe down the line being able to draw a pension in both jurisdictions, or is there any advantages to someone living in the Republic and working in the North?
There is, and many people do take advantage of that. So, for example, I know in the UK at the moment there's an amnesty for people who, if you performed it's either 3 or 5 years work in the UK consecutively, you can even, if you haven't made the 10-year mark, you can retrospectively pay sums of money towards that to bring you to 10 years, and then you're entitled to a UK pension from retirement age. And if you're somebody who's worked both North and South, for example, in Ireland, then you may be entitled to pensions in both jurisdictions. So again, there are advantages to it. The number of years you're working in each jurisdiction, the consecutive years, a number of other factors come into play. But as like many things, there are some advantages to it. It's just with this cross-border workers piece, we found modern day working, there's a very, very restrictive criteria in that trans-borders worker relief that says, basically, if you want to avoid paying tax in both jurisdictions, you have to perform all of that work in the UK. And Greg, we found talking to groups such as the Derry, Letterkenny Digital Corridor, I know there's a number of initiatives cross-border on the medical fields. It makes those organisations very difficult to function because you're going to naturally have people from both sides of the border needing to go to both places to make that happen. And again, what you don't want is people worrying about what are the tax implications if I join this organization and try and, you know, create that benefit for all. So the impacts are sort of varied and many.
All right, okay, it's complicated. I can understand why it's hard to get the message across, and I can also understand how it's difficult maybe to get someone in Dublin to sort of grab this by the horns and come up with an absolute resolution, because it's a problem far, far away. And I think if you were sitting in a bar with someone who's living in Dublin and started explaining what you're explaining about how we have to live our lives up here, they'd be going, what? But really? What? I thought Donegal was in the North anyway, or something like that. You know what I mean? All right, listen, thanks for that, Conor. I'm not sure I know any more, but I hope people that's right, because it is complicated and it's not your fault because you explained it very well. But I think people who are in that situation, it'll resonate with them very well. So thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. Conor Dowds there, who was the co-chair of the Cross Border Workers Coalition. So hopefully that to some extent has helped that listener. Hi, Greg. Our own traffic lights at McGinley Motors. Another accident waiting to happen. Cars turning up Justice Walsh Road while on red, going on green for straight, and they turn up on red. It's also slowing traffic down. Learn to use traffic lights, folks, says that motorists. Let me see. Hi, Greg. I may have missed it, but was there ever any determination of what caused the horrific Chrysler tragedy? No, it's obviously a very, very complex multi-agency international investigation. And we heard coincidentally from Drew Harris there in the bulletin. He expects a satisfactory, I think that's the words he used, outcome to it. The answers will be delivered, but they are going to take their time. And I don't think anyone... Well, I can't speak for anyone, but I imagine, I'm guessing that no one wants it rushed because it's going to be incredibly important. Why are there no parking signs at the pedestrian crossing in Boncrana? It's not uncommon for school children to come onto the road from behind a lorry, and it is a crash waiting to happen. Also, there are no loading bays for lorries on the main street. And that was a follow-on from our conversation about the traffic in Ballybofey. And we got so many messages that I simply could not read them out. But let me just tell you, the overwhelming majority of people believe that the traffic crossings, particularly the bank one in Ballybofey, needs to be looked at. But we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments on that. A caller says the pothole and convoy was filled, but it seemed to be a patch job and had started to open up again within a few days. The council do fill potholes, but the quality of repair work never seems to be enough to last for very long. Hi, Greg. There's an unreal bad pothole on the way up to Glenealy's school. It would affect the cars coming down from school. Then on the way to Ballybofey on the back road, people will definitely damage their cars. And another one here before a break. I was driving this morning and I cleared the snow from the windows before I set out to work, but not the roof. Driving along the road, the snow fell off the roof down on top of the front window screen. Not only did it give me a fright, but it could have put me off the road. Lesson learned, clear the entire car before you set out in the morning. Probably not bad advice. Right, so we heard the government has announced a multi-million euro scheme to repair Celtic Tiger era apartments after it was revealed that thousands across the state were not built standard. The cabinet has agreed to draft legislation to support the remediation of apartments and duplexes with fire safety, structural safety and water ingress defects. A working group report published in July found up to 100,000 apartments and duplexes built between 91 and 2013 were defective, with fire safety being the most prevalent issue. The scheme is estimated to be worth up to 2.5 million. And it's expected that it'll cost around 25 to 30,000 euro, I think, to fix each apartment. But it's been made very simple. People aren't going to have to do it individually. It's going to be a whole building approach. They're fixing problems, really, before anyone can identify them. And if you've begun work or you've done work, it looks like you will also get payment for that retrospective. Sounds nothing like the defective concrete scheme, does it? Anne Owens joins us now. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, I mean, the first line here is the Dublin scheme is a disgrace. It's a disgrace in the context of what we're going to talk about. It's fantastic if you're affected by this. It's a bells and whistles scheme. But when you look at it compared to what was offered to homeowners in Donegal and elsewhere, it's just, it's insult to injury, isn't it? We don't begrudge these people. I'm delighted, but it's insult to injury.
Absolutely. As campaigners, we totally welcome this announcement. We're delighted for the people in duplexes. But I would temper that by saying that what we do not welcome is the difference in the way that we've been treated. So, you know, MICA homeowners need and deserve what I call hashtag parity with the pale. There's nothing short of blatant discrimination in how they have been treated and how we have been treated. And as I say, best of luck to them. We're fully behind them. But I mean, the decision to, you know, give them 100% of those apartment owners and duplexes, it's simply discriminatory. It's unfair. It's lacking in natural justice. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you'd allow me just a few minutes, Greg, to go through a comparison of why we are, as campaigners, very upset about this announcement. So the people in Dublin in the duplexes will be getting 100% redress. Though the no cap, they will not be tied to the 2007 regulations. All affected can apply on a complex-by-complex basis. Retrospective payment will be permitted. So if you've already fixed your home to a standard that's acceptable, you can recoup everything that you've spent. An office is to be made available to them specifically as a headquarters to provide advice, assistance and support. No campaign was required. No campaign. And the scheme will be based on primary legislation. Let me compare that with what we have had in Donegal. First, we're in the 12th year of our campaign. And that protracted campaign, I cannot underestimate the effect that this campaign has had on the mental and the physical health of our homeowners and indeed our campaigners. We are left now with a flawed scheme on flawed houses caused, as you know, Greg, and everybody listening to this will know, caused by soft-touch regulation and nothing short of gross negligence at a local and national government level. We're left with a foundation issue. The government actually expect us to build without looking at our foundations. Mm. We all know about that. But what a lot of people don't know about, and it's something that I've been trying to bring up at all levels, and that is the legal and technical issues of repairing and rebuilding semi-detached and terraced homes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have heard this on your programme so far, but anybody in a semi-detached house or a terraced house, for example, Greg, in order to demolish their house or repair it, will need indemnification from their adjoining neighbour. Now, what neighbour in a rotten MICA house is going to give that indemnification? Because there's a very good chance where the woodworm are holding hands, the MICA woodworm I refer to, that if one house is demolished, that the other house will fall or be Oh,
for sure. And listen, there are some, and we have discussed that over the years, Anne. I mean, there's complications. Yes. If one were council-owned, one was privately owned, maybe one person wanted on the scheme, the other person didn't want on the scheme, maybe wanted the resources to go on the scheme. The other could be an older couple who don't have the cash to make up the shortfall. I mean, the problems there are evident. It's like, Anne, it's like they took a submission as to what would be a good scheme for Donegal, what we were looking for up here, and without a campaign, they said, well, look at these ones in Donegal have given us all the things a good scheme must have. So lots of the stuff that was refused for the people of Donegal, it's almost like it's been copy and pasted into what seems like a really good scheme for the people of Dublin. And let me ask you, put something else to you as well. And unfortunately, by the way, I just want to say, Charlie McConlogue is not available this week to speak to us, OK? So we've made inquiries.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, well, he's not. Joe McHugh, we can't get through to Joe McHugh to get any response from him. So this is, I think when there's sort of, if you look at this story along a line, I think this is a marker where this is one of the most important days in the Defective Concrete story for me anyway. And unfortunately, neither Charlie McConlogue or Joe McHugh, perhaps for good reason, are available to speak to us today. And listening, Anne, to the way Darragh O'Brien framed the current scheme here in Donegal, it sounded like he thinks it's not too bad, you know, that things are working. Let's just listen to it. I want to just play a little clip of what he said a little earlier on, just to see if we can get a sense of it.
The issue with regard to banking and how mortgage lenders are dealing with some homeowners is an issue that's been raised with me, which we'll continue to address with the banks also, and I'll address this directly with residents. I'm pleased to see, I'll ask Count Corlo as well, that we're seeing applications, particularly in Donegal and Mayo, being processed through the system now, being processed effectively and efficiently. We've a lot more to do in that space, but all of those homeowners will receive the benefit of the revised scheme, the revised 100% redress scheme, and I'll keep the deputy informed of our engagement with regard to the banks on the mortgage issues.
Well, listen, we've heard the bank stuff a million times now. I don't think anyone thinks anything's going to change there. But is the scheme working effectively and efficiently under the new, he also referenced it in an earlier clip, under the new enhanced 100% redress scheme? Is that how it is on the ground, Anne, in Donegal?
Look, Greg, all I can say is that talk's cheap. And can I just, you said something very important there with regard to the variation in the schemes. I would say, I'm going to say, is that the government took make a homeowner's wish list and used it as a template to write up the scheme for the apartment owners. I would actually say they used our wish list as a template. But going on from what he said, again, talk's cheap. And I just heard from one of our councillors this morning that, and this is definitively true, this is empirical evidence, 50% of all applications coming into the council at the moment are breaching the existing cap. And that is even taking into account the increase in the SEAI figures. So 50% of our applications are breaching the cap.
They don't include foundations, I take it, Anne.
No, they don't include foundations. We don't know where that will be in the new regulations because we don't have them yet.
Yep.
The enhanced regulations, we don't have them yet. We're not privy to them yet. But 50% of applications coming in, according to Martin McDermott, are breaching the existing cap. Mm. So what does that mean? In reality, that means that people will have to find the balance of that money themselves. Now, people will be forced into incredibly difficult situations. So if you have two professionals working in a house who have a good chance of finding the money to fix their house, they will actually have to say they won't be getting Susie grants for their children if they have children. They will be forced into a situation where they will have to decide, do I educate my children because I won't qualify for the Susie grant, or do I repair my house? They are the lucky people. There will be other people who just don't have 40, 50, or 60,000.
No, most people don't. I mean, unless they're different people I know. No one I know could put their hand on 30, 40, 50,000 euro. Maybe it's just the circles I mix in, but they simply don't. And the older you get, the less, you know, either you dig into the slight bit of comfort you might have had for your retirement, or you try and get a loan, which you probably won't get. And what I don't understand, and anyone sitting around this ministerial table who approved this, what I can't understand is that you accept that people of Dublin are more deserving than people in Donegal, because the only difference here is that people of Donegal were wronged at a higher price. They did nothing wrong. The people in Dublin done nothing wrong. The only difference is that it costs more to fix the Donegal problem. So people are being discriminated against. It's plain as the nose on my face. These are all victims, yet the victims in Dublin are being looked after. Fair play to them. The victims in Donegal and elsewhere, they're being thrown this mess to try and unravel, to see if they can get some sort of repairs done to their house. It's so unfair. I don't know how anyone could sit around a ministerial table and tick off on this. I would have said,
absolutely,
I am not approving this until you. I am not approving this until you apply the same rules to the scheme in Donegal. And I would have got up
absolutely
and walked out.
Greg, you know what? We are all citizens of this country. I thought our constitution said that that meant we were equal, and I thought that our constitution would then confirm that there should be natural justice for all citizens of the state. But it would appear to me that there is a divide. So you've got inside the pale, you've got outside the pale, and that there is a huge disparity in how people in those circumstances are treated, which again, Greg, leads us on to an argument which is not for today, but why does that exist?
Because there's probably 30,000 votes up here and maybe 500,000 votes down there. Maybe 1 million, I don't
absolutely
know.
Absolutely.
Is that what it comes down to? Is that the currency?
Absolutely, but I go back to citizenship and natural justice. And we have to, Greg, ask our TDs, we have to particularly ask our minister at the table, Charlie McConlogue, why he permitted this travesty and why it was obscured and hidden until the day before it was announced.
Because it was actively suppressed. It was actively suppressed. It was released. It was released between Christmas and New Year's, and people, not me, were asked to sit on it, and some people did. And as soon as I heard about it, I'll put it out there. But
absolutely, I'm not talking about you, Greg.
No, I'm not being defensive. I'm not being defensive, but I know this. I know a lid was kept on this. I know it was.
But our TD and our minister at the table was involved in this decision. He was actively involved in this decision. He was part of it. And I mean, the anger that is out there from Mika homeowners, I mean, it's nothing short of a re-trauma. This is going to fuel further anger, further distress, re-trauma, and huge political cynicism. That is to say, if we in Donegal could get any more cynical.
No, well, that's the problem. I was going to say that. Yeah.
We're
going to continue to cover this. Thanks for accepting our invite this morning. Thank you. Yvonne Shufflin, good morning to you, Yvonne. What's your take on this? Thanks for speaking to us again.
How's it going, Greg?
All right.
I just wonder where I could get a Dublin postcode. This morning, because just really shocked, Greg, at that, you know, that it took 12 months to get this scheme up and running, and it's just shocking.
For those not aware, you own an apartment. You have been fighting for everything that was delivered for people last night, and yet here you are with one arm as long as the other. No help for you really at all. It must just be extra bad for you.
It is, Greg. It's a kick in the teeth. Like, to me, this is discrimination at the highest level. And for Dara Breen to say that the scheme is in place and it's working effectively is the biggest load of rubbish. We are stuck. We're stalled in the scheme at the minute because we have a duplex apartment and there's so much complications with it. It's unbelievable. Like, it's just a kick in the teeth. And as you say, you're standing with one arm longer than the other. Mm. We're no better off 10 years later, Greg, fighting and emailing and...
That's a big part of any of our lives, Yvonne, for this cloud to be hanging over everything. From everything in your life, I presume, goes through this filter, this defective concrete filter.
Greg, you have no idea. You have no idea the stress and the torture and the torment and the actual despair that we as a family have went through. Our children have grown up with nothing but Nike. You know, we're not even living in our apartment because it's so dangerous. You know, there's a big block fell off 2 days ago because of that freezing and the thawing. Mm. And there's another pit hanging just in the balance.
I was just listening to some of the conversation yesterday, and I wanted to go to Eileen, but Eileen, if it's okay, if you hang up, we'll come back to you after 10. They were talking yesterday about how this is good because there was a fire and someone could nearly have died, and we've seen what happened in Grenfell, and we don't want that happening in Dublin. And I was thinking, and I don't know how to phrase this with it sounding wrong, but where would we be at if one of these walls, and it could have happened, fallen on some kids playing football against the gable, or if a chimney stack fell down in a car and killed people? Would we have to be arguing like this, Yvonne? Would it have taken the loss of life for Donegal to be looked after correctly? Because it seems our good luck in that regard has worked very much against us.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know if that would bring things on, Greg, to be honest, because the way that we've been treated. I mean, I have a gas. Our apartment is gas with a twisting building. Like, and I have sent this to the housing department and the environmental health. I have about 1,000 emails sent all over the country. Mm-hmm. And not one bit of help have we received. We're not even living in the apartment, Greg. We had to move out.
And listen,
still paying a mortgage.
And I think I can read between the lines of what you're saying there as well, Yvonne, and the potential dangers. Listen, we're going to return to this as well, Yvonne. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, Yvonne. And I'm really sorry that you're waking up with this slap again. All right, thanks so much indeed.
Yeah.